Stand by all cameras.
Ready with slow motion and isolated cameras. In less than 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Take.
Now back to Cofield and Company, live from the front yard inside Ellis Island on ESPN Las Vegas.
It always cracks me up when you get a game that's a three-point spread. Like, Vegas is pretty good at this. And then you watch TV talking heads go to pick the game straight up. And they're like, there's no way the Dolphins could win this game. Like, Scott Van Pelt just closed out the early pregame. It's not early. It's a pregame. And he picked the Dolphins, and they were like, whoa! What? And he's like, I don't know how they're going to do it. They're three-point underdogs. Of course they can win this game. Steelers are not a great team, and it's not snowing. It's cold, and Tua's been terrible in cold weather. He's 0-5. He's 1-4. ATS. I think the Steelers will win, but I would not be shocked if the way the Dolphins are playing right now on offense, they can win this one. We have so much to get to. 5 o'clock hour. Yesterday was wild, exhilarating, extremely, extremely sad. Around football and outside of football. And there was a reason that I asked about Geno Smith. And if the Chiefs would have an interest in Geno Smith. So with Patrick Mahomes going down for the year, Jeff Parles is here at Schofield, Ellis Island. Monday Night Football is up in 5 minutes. I don't know that Patrick Mahomes is going to be ready to start the season. Okay, I don't think that's smart. There could always be complications with ACLs. He needs to be as close to 100% as possible. So let's say safely he can come back in the middle of next season. And when I say safe, that's not the way I'm looking at it as personnel, GM people, you know, GM personnel people with the Chiefs. I'm going and getting quarterbacks who I think can really hold down the fort. Now, free agent-wise and trade candidates, the list is not awesome, although I do have, like, 17 names. Here are some of the guys who could be available for the Chiefs. Because, one, Andy Reid ain't going to tolerate, like, hey, let's just limp our way through the season. No, they're going to want to win. And while I don't think they've done a wonderful job of layering the offense with awesome talent, young talent, I trust in Brett Veach and the personnel people. They're going to be good next year around the quarterback. O-line's got a good fix, too. But I had Geno Smith on the list as a guy who could play quarterback for the first half of the season. I'm going to give you a bunch of others. Marcus Mariota, Zach Wilson, Tygod Taylor, Joe Flacco, Kenny Pickett, Mitch Trubisky, you'd have to probably get in a trade. Trey Lance, I'm going to stop there. That's the first part of my list. Anything, float your boat.
If you're Washington, you can't let Mariota leave, especially with Daniels.
That's a good point.
Daniels' injury history. Geno doesn't excite me because I think he's done. I think just the fell off the cliff. Quickly, and not only that, Seattle, now with both Geno and Pete Carroll and Russell Wilson, have been pretty good of the guys' careers falling off once they get out of town. Zach Wilson, no. Tyrod Taylor, I think he should retire. I think he's just done. Flacco's the interesting one, because if he wants to play another season, it makes a ton of sense for him to go to a team that it's, all right, I'm going to be the backup, but I have a chance of playing, and if the guy who I'm backing up happens to go down, I can actually lead this team to the playoffs like I did in Cleveland a few years ago. So of your list, I think Flacco is by far the best of that first portion of the list, since you have more of it coming.
Are there some guys who would go, who you could get for cheap, because maybe they don't get a big contract, and they could look at the Chiefs situation and go, holy crap, I could really shine here for part of a season and then get my big deal? And one of the guys I want to throw out there, I'll throw out two of them, Mac Jones and Davis Mills.
What a turn for Davis Mills that this is the conversation now.
I hope people listening understand what I'm saying here. The Chiefs should not look at next year and go, hey, let's Let's go with Phil Rivers. As much as that story would be interesting, you know, I'm trying to think of some of their backup quarterbacks over the years. Who was the freaking Chad guy who played at Michigan?
Chad Henne?
Yeah, Chad Henne.
Hey, Chad Henne. They saved him in the playoff game.
They gotta get a real quarterback or two. Seriously, I would get two.
So remember, Gardner Minshew's the backup. He's going to play the rest of the year.
I would not stick with Gardner
because that last drive after Mahomes got hurt yesterday was
We saw Gardner last year.
Yeah, I wouldn't do that.
He's an emergency backup. You know, you can't plan on a season with eight games of him.
You know, the interesting one is, well, I'm going to give you two real quick, okay? I'm going to go totally off the wall here. I'm going to give you Russell Wilson, which I wouldn't do because I think Russ is a malcontent plus is done. And then I'm going to go a little bit crazier with the New York Giants scenario.
Mm-hmm.
Someone who's not on your list. Former New York Giant and now on the New England Patriots. What about Tommy DeVito?
Stop.
What about Tommy DeVito?
Stop. Now, you mean you're being silly.
I'm not being silly.
Tommy Cutlets.
He's better than some of these guys that are on this list.
He's actually not better than anyone I have on the list. The rest of my list has...
He's better than Zach Wilson.
I don't know if he is. The rest of my list has Tyson Bagent, who's the backup. Is that his name, Tyler or Tyson? Whatever.
Tyson. I don't think Chicago's letting him go, by the way.
I think he actually can be a decent quarterback. Deshaun Watson, if he's just cut. Jameis Winston, and then more projects. I mentioned Trey Lance earlier. Justin Fields, another old man in Andy Dalton. Ty Huntley, Spencer Rattler could be a project. Drew Lock, I think, could get you through half the season. And then I named Jake Browning because I'm the only person who likes Jake Browning alive.
Of that list, I think Locke is by far the best. Locke and Jameis are by far the two best options on that list.
But I'm right here, correct? Like, they're not going to go with some schlub at quarterback and roll the dice that Mahomes is ready to go.
Well, I just wonder. Well, the big question is, it comes down to, do they like Gardner Minshew or not? Which, I don't think so. I actually, in all honesty, Locke is an interesting one on that because I think his contract's only 1 year up in Seattle. I think he's a free agent again, if memory serves me correctly. Locke's from Kansas City and went to the University of Missouri. Like, that would be a nice little fit there. And I actually, like, Locke's got a good skill set if he's not throwing interceptions. I think going back to it, I think Flacco and Locke, boy, that is kind of a sad state of affairs when you've had Mahomes for these past few years. But, Cofield, I'm kind of with you. We're right on the border of being able to be ready for week one. We're right on the border.
But I don't think he will be.
I think they're going to push it, honestly. I think they're going to push it.
In the current state of the AFC, it's going to be more wide open next year than it's ever been.
Yep.
And you can't afford to get off to a garbage start if you're the Chiefs. Now, there's a lot of people listening right now who are like, who cares? I hope they suck. Okay, we're not talking about your wishes and desires. I hope they suck, too. Andy Reid is 67 going on 68, and hopefully I was going to be a smartass and say, you know, 345 going on 400.
Oh.
By the way, his offseason, get on something. Take the shot, drop some weight. I did reach out to someone yesterday and said, hey, is Reed just going to say, screw it, man? I don't want to be part of this without my guy Mahomes. And the person responded by saying he will coach until he's done, or he can't walk.
What, Andy? Andy can't walk.
Like, he ain't walking away.
Okay.
He ain't quitting.
I tend to agree with that. I am going to throw something out there real quick that we've harped on a lot this year because of seeing teams come from the bottom up to the top, as you've mentioned plenty of times. Kansas City's going to have a third-place schedule next year.
And I was thinking of that yesterday, that all these teams that were highfalutin teams that got dealt a murderous schedule, like the Ravens, the Chiefs, are all going to get the benefit.
Well, maybe not Baltimore. They still could win that division.
That's a good point. Yeah.
But Cincinnati is another one. They're going to have a third-place schedule again.
Top of the heap. Let's go over to the NFC.
Yeah.
Boy, the Rams were impressive again.
Oh, yeah.
Weren't great early. That's a rough loss for the Lions. Rams are damn good, and I think they can survive the injury to Devontae Adams. I think they'll be okay.
Long term, they will be fine, but it's a short week against the team that, again, Seattle played an awful game against them and almost beat them the first go-around. But the cracks are starting to show with Darnold. He has not played well the last 3 weeks. But I just want to go to Lions for perspective for a second here, Cofield, because I think they've been better on offense as a whole since Campbell has taken over the play calling. But there have been multiple games, including yesterday, where he just forgot he had Jahmyr Gibbs. who Gibbs at this point is the, to me, Gibbs is the is the best running back in the NFL because of the versatility of what he can do, especially with Barkley taking a step backwards. And obviously Taylor's situation has turned into a mess because he's a 44-year-old quarterback now in Indy. But did you see how unbalanced they were yesterday? I mean, at one point, St. Brown and Williams had 16 of the 17 catches. and like 18 of the 20 targets. Like, that can't happen in the NFL for a full game. And that was the best game Goff's played all year, and they lost. And I don't care that you played the best team in the NFL. You can't lose that game when Goff is playing that well, and they did. Now, Detroit's got an extraordinarily difficult path in front of them because it's no gimme they beat Pittsburgh this week. No gimme on that. And in the final week of the season, they're not going outdoors and meeting Chicago if they need that game. I really don't think they're going to. That felt like a golden opportunity for Detroit to get back in this race fully, and they just flat out missed it.
Meanwhile, in the division, it's amazing what one loss can do when it's really competitive at the top of a division or the top of a conference. And the Packers, on top of that, lose the game, and they lose Micah Parsons, ACL.
It was brutal. Brutal. Because Parsons still hasn't played up to his potential, like, pre-injury this year. But the fact that he's on that defense just obviously gave them an extra dimension and made it a little bit easier for others. Even though I will tell you, I forget what the stat was, but Green Bay's at the bottom of the league at second half adjustments. Their defense has been shockingly awful in the second half of games this year. And they also, too, like, I know Christian Watson apparently escaped significant injury, Cofield, but you could tell the difference with that offense pre-Christian Watson getting hurt yesterday and post-getting hurt. Watson had been playing at such a high level since coming back from injury. He'd been playing like a legitimate number one wide receiver, and that dimension was gone yesterday, and Denver was able to pin their ears back a little bit better defensively. That's a gigantic game on Saturday. That's a gigantic game with the Bears with a golden opportunity where, look, if Chicago wins on Saturday, it's going to be really difficult for Green Bay to win that division because of that tie that they have thrown in there, and with Chicago having a home game week 18 against Detroit mixed in there.
Jerry Jones has something to say after every game.
Yep.
Never shy. He wouldn't give a comment when told that Micah Parsons, the guy he traded, tore his ACL.
A little surprising.
Why do you think that is? Do you think he actually had a moment, and we should all process this?
Sure.
And we, like, I mean everyone, all the way up to the top. There are times you should just shut up for a day or two and think before you spurt out your first thought. But Jerry's never like that. So when he was asked about Micah Parsons, he said, no, I'm not going to comment. I'm sorry, but I don't have any the details about the injury or severity of it all. I don't have any knowledge at all. I wouldn't know how serious it is or reaction to it because I don't know how serious it is. Okay. I mean,
bizarre that Jerry actually did the right thing and didn't comment. Yeah. But, you know, I just also wonder, that was postgame, right, Cofield? That wasn't like pregame or anything. It was postgame. I mean, that was a pretty bad performance by his own team last night. So maybe for once he was actually concerned about his own team's output last night, because that was, I mean, they made McCarthy look really, after the interception, I hope he didn't drive. McCarthy was great yesterday. That just can't happen. By the way, he did, Eberflus is gone also. See you later for that, for Matt Eberflus in Dallas.
I wonder what his next stop is. College defensive coordinator?
I mean, that's where he was. I mean, that's where he did the bulk of his work.
Hey, Matt Patricia might have rebounded his career.
Yeah.
Might have. I still don't
know. He should never leave Columbus as long as he's welcome there. Well, I mean, Chip obviously proved that too.
No one should. You're gonna have a top five roster on both sides of the ball. If you're a coordinator, collect your $1.5 million, $2 million, $2.5 million, and live it up. Don't have a desire to be the top guy.
Yeah.
And we know in the case of Patricia, he didn't deal well with being the top guy. His ego was out of control. He got more slovenly looking. Like I said last week, I think he lost a little weight. Maybe it motivated him to be less lazy.
Gave number two pencils a bad name for a little bit there, Cofield.
Yeah. Then there's the Raiders. I thought Mike Florio wrote something pretty interesting from Pro Football Talk. And we'll get Miles Simmons' reaction on his guy, Florio, tomorrow. What are the Raiders right now in terms of an organization? Like, who's running it? What's the direction? And I hadn't really thought of this, but Florio, you know, called him on the carpet. If Tom Brady is actually making decisions, should he be making any of them anymore? If he's not all in? And can you be mostly in if you're broadcasting?
No. That's my answer to the second part. And do we even know how much influence Brady has had? We have no clue.
That's the shell game.
We have no clue.
That's been the game the whole time.
Yeah.
And that's an easy way to not really appear to be sapping power from, you know, guys you just brought in.
Sure.
And it also absolves you from blame.
Well, I think as long as Brady's in the broadcast booth, he's going to be absolved from blame for this. But
Well, then is Jim Gray his conciliary, and he's the one giving TB12's message to the organization, because then that ain't working either.
No, what's working this year? Period. Nothing has worked. Nothing has worked since week one, realistically.
I have to say again, I'm going to say it a million times, and this show was very strong on this. The philosophy of running back first and then everything else second in the draft, no.
Well,
I just mentioned Trevion Henderson just pouring salt in the wound yesterday with another explosive game. He was available. You remember the Raiders moved on their pick in the second round, took Ashton Jeanty, and he may turn out to be an awesome running back, but the O-line has the appearance of needing an almost complete rebuild.
Well, how
the hell are you going to do that?
And you mentioned with the pick behind Jeanty was Armon Membu. Look, the Jets are bad, but Armon Membu has been as good of an offensive rookie as there's been in the entire NFL this year. He has been great. And look, when you compare bad teams with seemingly no direction in this league right now, I don't know if there's a situation I would say is worse than the Raiders' situation right now. Like, at least, like, the Giants have the quarterback in place, we think, in Dart. The Titans, we think. Cam Ward, even though they weren't that competitive yesterday, Cam Ward has gotten a lot better over the last few weeks, have the quarterback in place. The Jets have an offensive line in place moving forward. The only situation you can argue is worse right now is Cleveland, but at least Cleveland has the best defensive player on the planet right now who's going to break the sack record. So
I guess the term would be identity.
There's no identity.
What are you building around?
You're building around Brock Bowers? As great as Brock Bowers is, you can't build around a tight end. It's really bad, Cofield. I was having this conversation with a friend of mine this morning. They are, and look, maybe I'm a little more just hyper aware of them because we're here, and there's a lot of bad teams in this league, especially over the last few years. This team is closest to the winless Browns. Like, that's how bad this has gotten. That's what they remind me of the Hugh Jackson teams that won two games in three seasons. That's how bad it has gotten here for the Raiders here in 2025.
Which then opens the door for this conversation. You need a complete rebuild. Joe Burrow was all melancholy last week. Does he want to be moved? You and I addressed this on Saturday morning. Why would Joe Burrow want to go from the Bengals, who are rudderless, to the Jets? You built a case for the Jets because the O-line. And at least they draft the right way. They've, you know, built up the coffers with the defensive line as well enough that they could trade Quinnen Williams. They have a bunch of picks. Now they'd have to trade the picks to get Joe Burrow. Would you trade, like, three first-round picks and 3 seconds to get Joe Burrow if you're the Raiders? Like, hey, you know what? We got the quarterback. We can go from there.
I mean, you'd have to entertain it, but then you go back to the question of why would Burrow want to do that?
Yep.
Because at least if you're looking at the organizations that haven't been good. Again, the case for going to New York is better at the moment because they have an offensive line than it is here. Again, there are three players on this roster that I think you can consider, like, you would like to have around, and even Max Crosby, who is an amazing player by any stretch, doesn't make much sense for a team that's this far away. And Jeanty, again, it goes back. like, you're 100% right. A lot of, a good portion of this goes back to building it out the wrong way. And as great as Ashton Gentry was at Boise State, when the Raiders were as far away as they see, as they, well, are now, you cannot ever take a running back at number six, regardless of how good he was in college.
You know, the crazy thing, too, with a regime change, I assume Spytek's going to stay around.
Yeah, he kind of has to.
When you look at the list of coaching candidates around the NFL, have you taken a gander?
I have not.
I'll say eight of the top 10 guys who were hot names, all from a defensive background. And
that's
that
not
does
good,
not seem nope. to be the trend in the NFL. But like Mike McCarthy, offensive background, but I don't think Mike McCarthy would. And this is
I don't
bad.
Know why McCarthy would want to do
that's
that
what
to
I was
himself.
Gonna say.
You know, it's just one of those where, like, Kingsbury, just thinking of guys on the offensive side.
Well,
like
it's not going to be Kingsbury because he already went through an experience here where
exactly.
they wouldn't give him a 3-year deal.
Exactly. Like,
so I'm sure that happening. Turned him off. He's like, not
happening. Like,
I don't love Cliff Kingsbury either.
I think Kingsbury's an offensive coordinator. He's not a head coach. But, like, does Robert Saleh make you excited? Does Jesse Minter as good of a, even though I think Jesse Minter will be a good head coach, the Raiders don't need that. Like, you're almost at the point, too, like, do you call Pittsburgh and try to trade for Mike Tomlin, but then you're getting rid of draft assets? Do you hope Baltimore fires John Harbaugh and you try to hire John Harbaugh? Like, I mean, like, this is not a good offseason to be needing a head coach, unless if you go to the college ranks. But the only guy in the college ranks that I think would make sense here would be Marcus Freeman. But if I'm Marcus Freeman, I think the only job I'm taking is the New York Giant job if I'm going to the NFL.
Yeah, I'm not leaving Notre Dame unless I have the quarterback.
Yeah, like the Giant job is the only one I'd consider. Well, I guess if he likes Cam Ward better than Dart, he could go to Tennessee too.
Crazy times. I didn't expect this. I didn't love the hire of Pete Carroll, but I didn't expect this. I didn't expect the Raiders to be sitting here on December 15th. In this situation with, you know, no identity, questions about what they're going to do moving forward, who's the decision maker, it really is wacky. College football playoff breakdown, also a little more UNLV talk as they're getting ready for a bowl game coming up on the 23rd. Caleb Herring, Football Insider, will join us in less than 5 minutes.
Now back to Cofield and Company for Monday Night Football at the Front Yard inside Ellis Island Casino on ESPN Las Vegas.
Scoreless game, not a whole lot of offense. I think 32 yards total offense. So Miami with the ball approaching their own 40-yard line. Pittsburgh and Miami going at it. Monday Night Football. Front Yard, Ellis Island. You got the all-you-can-eat food special, all-you-can-drink beer special, all-you-can-drink spirit special. They've got the holiday eggnog rolling out. You get a bottle of that. That's a great gift to bring to a holiday party. It's Parles, it's Cofield. Let's bring in Caleb Herring, talk some football here like we do every Monday. A little college football, a little NFL. Caleb, what's up, buddy?
What's up? Hey, question. Are you an eggnog guy?
Love eggnog.
You made me randomly go. You do? Wow. Yes. Okay, I didn't know that about you. I know you're a holiday season guy. But
yeah, there's really not much about the holidays I don't like. Although I'll throw this at you. Parles was just talking about his Christmas dinner choice. I'm still picking what I'd like to make. Parles, you're going to go with?
Caleb, my wife and I are going with crab legs this year.
What do you think of crab legs, and how would you cook them?
How many ways can you cook a crab leg? I don't think there's very many options, right? Like boil or like in a gumbo. But no, I think crab legs and seafood is for the community that I grew up in is more of a New Year's Eve thing. The seafood and all that stuff was like a New Year's Eve into New Year's Day dinner. But no, I'm all for a good crab leg, honestly.
Well, we did it 2 years ago. It was a massive success, and we're trying it again.
Massive success.
It was delicious. That's a massive success,
I love that.
Right?
Yeah, I love it. Not a massive success. My whole take last week on Maddox Madsen being stolen away by a Power Four for hundreds of thousands of dollars, the Boise quarterback. Boy, that feels like that changed a lot in a week. What in God's name happened at the L.A. Bowl where he wasn't good? Then Cutforth came in. He wasn't good. And all of a sudden, a Boise State quarterback situation that looked okay going to next year Now I think Spencer Danielson's got to think about changing the whole damn thing, and I think there's a lot of calls on the ground in Boise, like, you got to change it if this program wants to make a CFP in the future, win the Pac-12. They got to get better quarterback play.
Yeah, no, it was shocking, I think, to see Maddox struggle as much as he did. I know he got the injury, kind of re-aggravated it, but the injury wasn't the issue, right? Like, there's some throws that he made, some poor decisions that just were not efficient football. And it's frustrating for me as a Rebel fan, obviously, because it seems like the guy plays lights-out football whenever he's going up against the Rebels. Would have liked to have him lollipop a couple picks to us in the Mountain West Championship game, but wasn't the case. So there is an issue there. This is kind of evidence to what the Boise State fans have been complaining about throughout the years with Maddox Mattson. They've seen it. Obviously, they've watched him closer than we have, and they've kind of seen maybe his inefficiencies kind of rear their heads a little bit more often than we have. But this gives them license to say, yeah, we need to fix that quarterback situation. And they've been here before. They brought in a freshman, highly recruited freshman, and he was expected to be the one to knock Maddox out. But obviously, we see how that went down, and Maddox ended up winning out that starting job, and he's been the guy ever since. But that performance in the bowl game was just, I want to say it wasn't like Maddox Mattson. That's not the quarterback that I've watched over the last 3 years. But apparently that's something that's been hiding under the surface, and he struggled.
Let's flip this back to UNLV and the UNLV defense. I'm not saying, you know, Maddox Mattson playing a poor game should change everything about the UNLV defense, but it kind of does say something that the UNLV defense couldn't slow down this dude, Maddox Mattson.
Yeah, I definitely think it says something about UNLV's defense. The amount of free runners that Boise State has against UNLV on a routine basis, the line of scrimmage control, especially over the past few meetings with Boise State, is something that you note in this game, where Boise just couldn't really get a ground game going to speak of, which then would open up all their play-action gadget plays. Washington, let's be fair here, they're a solid Big Ten team. What, an 8-9 win Big Ten team? So they're a good football team, and I don't want to overlook that and make it seem like Boise is just terrible. But I think there's some deficits for UNLV that are glaring when you watch them play, when you watch Boise State play other defenses, especially good defenses like Washington obviously had this season. So I do think that schematically, if you want to say that, I'm kind of getting sick of using that word, but that UNLV's defensive strategy is not very conducive to stopping Boise State. And I think that has been clear. I will say, though, Boise State did have some free runners against Washington as well. When they did get some drives going, they had some gadget plays that even stumped the Washington defense. So give them credit for that, at least.
You know, I'm going to go back to the UNLV defense, and we've talked about this a lot in terms of what they recruited, what defense they recruited to. And we should also mention that while he was doing his job and doing, you know, what he felt was best, that Barry Odom stealing some of the linebackers for UNLV did eventually cost them, because they had a couple of guys in Manny Powell and also Charles Correa, who, that was disappointing that he left in the spring. He's a hometown guy. They both played really well in the Big Ten this year in their first year in their conference.
They did, and it makes you wonder about the possibilities had those guys who were already Rebels stayed around. And the linebacker, was it a depth issue at points in the season? They had to kind of manufacture depth with some younger guys like Patterson coming on and kind of building his reps in and growing him along during the season. But you look at that core with really Marcel McDuffie and Blessing Aluwalatuyo-Lamotu kind of leading the way in the middle. You say, man, if they had some more depth at that position. One, what kind of different schemes would they be able to put out there? Maybe see more three linebacker looks in that regard. But you mentioned it, the way that the defense was recruited was a totally different scheme, personnel included. And you got to remember, Dan Mullen had zero defensive backs on the roster when he signed on. And he built that thing from the ground up, essentially. I think maybe two guys that were on the roster and ended up getting meaningful minutes. But linebacker was not necessarily a position of need when he went through the spring camp. And then to lose two guys, Powell obviously a little earlier than Correa, but to lose those guys that maybe you were counting on to be some sort of impact players on that linebacking core really kind of put them up against it a little bit. And I think they found a way to make it work, built some depth, relied on the health of these guys, some injury-free season for Marcel McDuffie, which was good for him. Also with Blessing, really not a lot of injuries to speak of in that linebacker group. So that was beneficial. But having Correa as a young guy around would have been absolutely beneficial to that River defense.
Caleb Herring with us on ESPN Las Vegas. Caleb, can you put into perspective what a 44-year-old did yesterday in an NFL game with basically like a week's notice? And Phil Rivers, they didn't win the game. He wasn't horrific. I didn't think he was awesome. But how tough is that task?
I got out of bed, just for some context. I got out of bed the other day, and it was like 40 degrees in my house. And I had nothing to do, and I just got up kind of slowly and meandered around the living room. And then I went to grab a banana, of all things, and I had like this weird twinge in my back. And it took me out. I went right back to bed. I'm 34. I've been out of the game for a long time, and I get crunches in my bones sometimes just from my playing days. For Phillip Rivers to be 5 years removed, number one, 44 years old, which is a lot older than I am, living a more battle-scarred life and NFL resume than I have, for him to get back out there and even try this is on a week's notice, basically, is absolutely ridiculous. And then, like you said, to come perform well. Like, he did what he needed to do to win that game. For him to do that, I think, is the story of the year. I don't care I don't know what he has to do to be the comeback player of the year, but if he gets one win out of the next three games, I think he got to be the comeback player just for the sheer willpower to get that done. It's crazy to watch. I just can't imagine getting out of bed and going and playing an NFL game like that. Good for him. Good for the Colts. Maybe they have the chance to keep their playoff dreams alive and make a run or something. I don't know. We'll see.
I don't know if either of you saw this earlier today, but Rivers is now the second favorite for comeback player of the year in betting markets. Only Christian McCaffrey has better, shorter odds at this point now, Caleb.
Yeah, and I mean, Christian McCaffrey definitely deserves to be recognized, but I mean, there's nothing greater than coming out of retirement, right? Like, all the greats that came out of retirement. Going back to Tom Brady coming out of retirement, winning the Super Bowl, you know, Michael Jordan in basketball coming out of retirement. Like, coming out of retirement makes it a little bit more impactful than just coming back from injury. So I would, if I had a vote, which I don't, I would vote for Phillip Rivers just on principle alone. I know there's been a great season by McCaffrey. He's all-purpose God, so it'd be tough. But I think Phillip Rivers deserves that honor this year.
Caleb, let's go to New England and Buffalo yesterday. Patriots 21-0 midway through the second, 24-7 at halftime. And credit the Bills. They found a way to get it done. But it sure seemed like New England, even with the win over the Bills earlier in the year, still not quite ready for primetime.
Yeah, it's tough because they beat the Bills earlier this year. And it's like that, to me, felt like, okay, they're legit. That was like the only game really this year that made me feel like, okay, the Patriots may be a legit contender. Obviously, the Bills have struggled this year. They have been inconsistent, to say the least. But to have them down 21-0 at home just doesn't seem like you should lose that game if you want to be taken serious in the postseason. And I don't know if it was the fact that maybe they relaxed. They came out real fired up because what was at stake? Obviously, the ability to clinch the division, to clinch the AFC, first time being in that spot. And I think there was a lot of energy that went to that game plan and the opening of that game. But that doesn't excuse letting it slip. You have to be able to finish. And that's kind of the story of the playoffs and NFL football, especially late in the year like this. You have to be able to finish. And when you got the Bills down, you got to really make that statement and say, this is our division, this is our conference, we're going to have home field. It's the Tom Brady formula. Right, like one of the easier schedules in the AFC on the season, get home field advantage, three games, and you win the Super Bowl, right? Like that's kind of the formula for the Patriots. And unfortunately, they had the opportunity to seal that same formula, but they left the door open for the Bills. And I think while I will say the Bills came and took it, I will say there was some controversy as well. I didn't like the officiating down the stretch during that comeback. There's a call that was a catch that I did not think was a catch at all. And then a couple of pass interference that could have gone either way. Taking away interception, I think, was a big one. I think the Patriots did enough to intercept the pass, and contact was minimal. But they gave them the flag, and the Bills ended up scoring on that possession. So credit to the Bills, but you got to think that that's a choke job by the Patriots for sure.
We haven't really touched on this today because there were so many bad performances in the league yesterday. But, Caleb, what the heck was that from the Bengals and Burrow yesterday?
I have a theory. I think Joe Burrow, after losing, last week, and throwing those kind of embarrassing interceptions and that press conference that he gave, I think Joe Burrow has started his off-season lobbying for roster adjustments. And I say that I think Joe Burrow is a great quarterback. He's a fantastic guy, fantastic player. But I think he has this ability to and the willingness to flex his leverage within the organization. I saw the statements that he made in that post-game presser after the Bills game as him basically saying, I need something, and unless I get it, there might be issues going forward. And again, it worked like a charm because everybody started talking about, is his time with the Bengals done? What does he need? Let's acquiesce to him. And remember, he's done this before in lobbying for Jamar Chase and T. Higgins to get their paychecks. He's been willing to use his influence to make those kind of things public and manipulate the system publicly. So I think that's what it was. Now, as far as his poor play against the Ravens, I don't know how you justify that if you're an elite quarterback. He said it himself, so I'm glad he took some ownership this week and said nobody's going to win if the quarterback plays that way, which is, I think, putting it the best that you could. But I think Joe Burrow is in full offseason influence mode right now. He says he's going to start. He's going to play out the rest of the season because he wants to win. But I think he's already trying to kind of manipulate the system for the Bengals to get whatever it is that he thinks he needs this offseason.
Speaking of this offseason, the Patrick Mahomes injury yesterday, coupled with the Chiefs getting eliminated from postseason contention for the first time in a decade, is a very uncomfortable offseason now coming for Kansas City, especially with that Mahomes injury.
It is. You worry about some of the possibilities. Obviously, you're probably not going to have Mahomes for the beginning of the season, and that's going to throw off the chemistry of whatever the roster looks like to start next year. Travis Kelce's future is still up in the air. I know there's been rumors and speculation that he may be retiring soon. He hasn't said anything officially. You've got guys maybe that you thought were going to be something that they're not, that just aren't there. And then obviously the people that you think are returning just age a year. So it's difficult. What do you do if you're the Chiefs? Do you blow it all up and rebuild and use this year with Patrick Mahomes injured, just kind of rest him and focus on drafting somebody better for when he comes back in 2027? Those are all things you got to consider. I will say it feels really weird. And this, I'll be honest, I'm not a Kansas City Chiefs fan. I haven't been thrilled about their run. I think parity is better for football than to see the same team in the Super Bowl year after year after year. But then when you look at it in the reality of it, a playoffs without Mahomes seems like such a distant memory. And I don't know what that's going to look like. And maybe it's going to be a case of you don't know what you got until it's gone. So I hope that he's back and gets to the high level that he's played at for his whole career. But it does seem like kind of doom and gloom around Kansas City. This is the first time, really, that they haven't had an answer for a struggle. Even after trading Tyreek Hill, they found a way to figure it out. And I don't think that this is going to be nearly as easy as figuring out a trade like that. This is going to be a tough one to overcome.
They are going to bring in an experienced quarterback. They're not going to give up. I'm sure they have expectations that Mahomes will be back by, at the latest, like week six. I'll give you three quarterbacks to stop the gap for Andy Reid, who has high expectations. He ain't coming back to lose, so he's coming back. Three guys. Geno Smith, Jameis Winston, Phillip Rivers.
Well, Geno Smith is probably a no-go, and he's played his way out of that this year. I don't think anybody really is willing to take a chance on Geno, which is the issue for the Raiders. Phillip Rivers, ironically enough, might be the first name that I stand on with that. Like, that sounds good. Cam Newton thinks he should be one of those names, obviously. Cam Newton thinks he should be one of those guys. So I do agree. I think they'll try to get through because the AFC is still wide open. I know Kansas City's not the top dog right now, but the Bills haven't cemented themselves as a top dog. The Patriots are still brand new. So with a fresh start, everybody's 0-0. I do think the Chiefs still have a good enough roster, especially with their defense and the way they can play when they're clicking. I think they are still very much alive in contention next year. So I do agree with that they're going to try to find somebody that's experienced enough to get the job done. I don't know who it's going to be, But how interesting would that be if Phillip Rivers makes that switch to an AFC kind of foe and helps the Chiefs out after helping the Colts out of a bad spot?
Caleb, good spot. Thanks for coming in on these Mondays, and I will see you next Monday in Dallas, Texas.
All right, sounds good. See you there.
There he is. Frisco Bowl coming up next Tuesday. Team traveling out a little earlier than that. I know Caleb's going for a couple extra days as they're getting ready this week for a game in the Frisco Bowl against Ohio. On the way back, a little college basketball to wrap on, and also the Mets fan across the way. Mets did it. I mean, big weekend. They got a great replacement for the polar bear. Pete Alonso goes. Here we go. Let's do it.
Cofield and Company presents Grab Bag on ESPN Las Vegas.
Stick your hand in there, Dave.
Dolphins Steelers still scoreless. We did recommend the under, right?
I don't remember.
I don't think we did. All
I know is this has been a horrible Tua performance so far.
He just had a chance to get a first down on the scramble, and then for some reason slid a yard before the marker.
Clearly short.
No recognition of where the first down marker was.
And he threw a horrible interception on a previous drive. Also, too, Rodgers took a sack to knock Pittsburgh out of field goal range. So, nice, fun game between two teams that have a combined record of 500 at COVID.
Rapid fire down the stretch here in the grab bag.
Sure.
Baseball, actually kind of busy over the weekend.
Yeah.
I don't hate what the Mets did. It's just the timing of it looks terrible. The Mets losing Pete Alonso to Baltimore. Their first base fill-in, at least for now, is Jorge Polanco, who had 26 homers, 78 ribs, is about, what's the best way to put it? He's Wilmer Flores.
Oh, he's better than Wilmer Flores.
He's better defensively. Yeah. Offensively, 18 and 65 for a season. I know last year he was better, but
he's a good hitter. But it's just again, David Stearns better be right. As I said to you over on Friday, he better be right, because I think this is the one thing that the analytics guys underrate. It's really hard to be a dude who hits 35 homers and drives in 100 runs every year. Mm-hmm. That's what Pete Alonso has done every year of his career. And, again, I know, Cofield, I know you're a Yankee fan, but, like, the American League East is a monster. And Alonso going to Baltimore makes that division even more difficult than it already was going to be.
Back in the back.
Stick your hand in there, Dave.
Excited for the NBA Cup. A little bit of a shocker, huh? Spurs.
Stunning.
Taking out OKC.
Stunning. I'll be there tomorrow night. That's why I'm not going to be with you tomorrow. So it'll be fun to see Wemby. It'll be fun to see the Knicks. It'll be first time the Knicks will have won something since 1973 if they can actually win tomorrow. I will say, though, Wembanyama is just the most amazing athletic specimen I think I've ever seen, because he is so big, and yet he is so graceful, and yet he is so talented, and everything works, even with how big he is and how young he is. Once San Antonio finally gets the elite team around him, they're winning multiple. They're the only thing that can stop an Oklahoma City dynasty, realistically speaking.
I was glad you mentioned how young he is, because this is just scratching the surface.
Yeah,
imagine when he fills out a little bit more and then understands the game a little bit more. He's pretty freaking awesome. Back in the back.
Stick your hand in there, Dave.
College basketball is starting to shape up with a lot of good power teams, and this was another good weekend. Michigan only won by 18.
Oh, they were losing at halftime.
Yeah. After they had won the previous six by 34 on average. Arizona, man. Goes into Birmingham, Alabama, and just smokes Bama.
That was very impressive, even though I will say, I texted a friend of mine, hey, this is not a good box score for Bama only being up one at halftime, and I should have bet Arizona, and they just whipped them in the second half. Zona's awesome. Michigan's awesome. Duke's awesome. There are a lot of really good high-end teams in college basketball this year.
The UNLV game on Saturday, not really readily available on any sort of video.
Yeah, yikes.
Holy crap, man. Tennessee State played hard, and Nolan Smith, I think, is going to be a good coach, and he'll make that into a good program. They were just tougher. They just went right through the chest of the Rebels in the paint time and time and time again, and the Rebels, I don't think, took them seriously for much of the game, and then it was too late. So, rough loss. They've had a season of rough losses. They got to get it together, because they have talent. You can see it. They've had some good road wins, but that was inexcusable. Back tomorrow on a Tuesday, full Cofield and Company heading to the broadcast of the NBA Cup. We'll see you.